emitting dirty light refractions from the useless sun.
"What's our plan?"
Cha asked quietly, so as not to be overheard. The Leviathans weren't intelligent, but they were connected to the hive mind, and Thanos hadn't yet figured out how great a distance the hive mind could project over.
"We enter the wormhole at a 32-degree angle against the plane of the elliptic,"
Thanos told Cha, showing him a quickly rendered hologram of their flight path. He had had to install special controls that bonded with the Leviathan's cortex in order to be certain the beast could maintain the proper approach angle.
"That should take us back to civilized space, where, hopefully, we can sell this monstrosity for enough money to rent a space ark with medical facilities."
The garbled message from Titan that Cha had received was actually a repeating warning from a beacon placed in orbit around the planet.
"Attention, local travelers! Avoid landing on Titan. Repeat, avoid landing on Titan. Environmental hazard and pandemic. Set course for SETI Prime instead."
"An environmental disaster brought on by overcrowding," Thanos said. "Just as one of the outcomes my models predicted. And the resulting deaths must have overwhelmed the mortuary and funereal systems. There would have been bodies in the streets for days, more than likely leading to an outbreak of antibiotic-resistant pathogens. A global pandemic."
He buried his face in his hands.
"I warned them, Cha. I warned all of them, and they didn't listen."
Cha rested a hand on Thanos' shoulder.
"I know, my friend. The universe sought to speak through you, and they ignored its wise counsel."
"Enough,"
Thanos growled, slapping Cha's hand away.
"I see no balance in children dead in the streets. I see no harmony in innocence choking to death on poison air."
Cha backed away slowly.
"Of course. I'm sorry."
He left, leaving Thanos, grief-stricken, to retreat deeper into the gullet of the Leviathan. They entered the wormhole at precisely 32 degrees. The Leviathan shook and twisted and roared, but the additional plating they'd grafted to its outer carapace sufficed, and it survived the trip. They wound up in Kree space. Thanos smiled grimly at the irony. At the onset of his exile, he'd intended to go to Kree space, marshal his forces, and return to Titan. Now he was doing precisely that, though far too late. Fortune smiled upon them, and on one of the Kree rimworlds they found a trader who was fascinated by the Leviathan's intermingling of insect, reptilian, and mechanical parts. They walked away with enough money to rent a medium-sized cargo ship and install dozens of auto-medical bays. Cha spent the better part of a week fine-tuning the bays to respond to Titanian physiologies, while Thanos retrofitted the ship's loading shuttles to serve as ambulances from the surface to the ship. He was going home. He was going home at last. The thought, the reality, the truth struck him at odd, random times. Particularly when he was trying his best to concentrate on the task at hand, it would assail him from nowhere, and he would be forced to step away from his work for a moment, to bask in it, to process it, to let the intermingled joy and grief wash over him. He could not hope that Gwynth or Cinta had survived. The odds were long against them. But he would take whomever he could. He would load them into his shuttlecraft and bring them to the cargo ship come hospital, which he had already appropriately renamed Sanctuary. Once aboard, he and Cha would succor those who could be saved and ease the pain of those who could not. They would give comfort to the dying and life to the rest. And then? And then they would find a new world. A ship full of refugees was rarely welcome in most parts of the galaxy, but Thanos would find a place. A new world. A final sanctuary for the survivors of Titan. They blasted off from the Kree Rimworld more than a year and a half after the initial message from the Titan beacon had reached them on the Chitauri homeworld. In Kree space, they no longer had to rely on the haphazard and dangerous placement of wormholes. There were transport gates in every system, sometimes more than one. With the last of their monetary reserves from the sale of the Leviathan, they paid the gate toll to Titan and received an automated warning.
"Travelers, Be aware that the Titan system is currently under voluntary quarantine. You travel there at your own risk.
Hovering just above the gate, Thanos looked over at Cha, who had joined him in Sanctuary's cockpit.
Your last chance to abandon the Mad Titan's quest, Thanos told him.
They need us, Cha said simply.
Thanos engaged the forward thrusters and guided them into the gate and to his home. Chapter 28. For the first time in years, Thanos beheld the orange-swaddled orb that was Titan. From a distance of thousands of kilometers, the planet looked exactly the same as it had when he'd left, with no indication as to the havoc that lurked beneath the haze. Warning buoys drifted in descending orbits around the globe, sounding their alarms as he guided Sanctuary closer and closer.
Warning! You are nearing a quarantined planet! Proceed at your own risk!
Which was precisely what he planned to do. At sublight speed, it seemed to take forever to find a reasonable parking orbit. He'd expected to pick up signals from survivors by this point, but the local comms channel was silent and dead. He established an orbit as close to the planet's atmosphere as possible. He wanted minimal distance for the shuttlecraft to travel. Sanctuary was a cargo ship. She had not been designed to land on planets, to suffer the stresses of gravity. For that, they had the shuttlecraft, which were built to ferry pallets of cargo from ship to surface and back, but had been modified by Thanos to serve as a combination of ambulance and clinic. Thanks to the automated piloting systems, he estimated they could rescue 4,000 Titans at a time from the surface of the planet to Sanctuary. They waited. Thanos assumed that survivors would have clustered in the Eternal City, but he didn't want to send his shuttlecraft there without being certain. There was a chance, however small, that people had fled the clotted and disease-racked city streets for the open foothills of the cryovolcanoes.
There's a signal, Cha said suddenly, pointing to a holographic readout. It's weak, but it's not background noise. It's definitely a signal. From here.
Thanos' eyes widened.
The center of the Eternal City. He rumbled. The Mentor Plex.
The what?
It was forever ago that he and Cinta had stared up at the floating androids as they assembled the Mentor Plex, casting Alarz's will into reality.
Never mind,
Thanos said.
It makes perfect sense that survivors would gather there.
He stood abruptly from his command chair, barking orders over his shoulder as he left the cockpit.
Send the shuttlecraft to that location. I'll take the command module down myself.
You're going down?
Cha leaped up and followed him.
Thanos, you don't know what it's like down there. The surface? The disease?
I'll be in an environment suit.
They marched through the corridor of the ship, toward the command module drop point.
That might not be enough, Cha argued. You don't know exactly what sort of pathogen you're dealing with. You can't risk yourself like that.
Thanos paused at the door to the command module.
They've been terrified and lost for years, he told Cha. If we just send down a fleet of shuttles and a message to get on board, they won't listen. They need someone down there to tell them it's safe.
You could die, Cha warned him.
The concern was touching, if misplaced. Thanos offered a tight, humorless grin.
I haven't yet.
He thumbed open the door. Beyond lay a large chamber, in the center of which was a small, sleek vessel. The command module. From here the captain of Sanctuary could run all the ship's functions while outside the ship itself. Cargo vessels frequently turned off life support to conserve energy during the laborious process of loading and unloading, so the command module was where the captain would supervise that procedure while the ship was crewed by robots and artificial intelligences. He rummaged in a nearby locker for his environment suit. The standard suits that came with Sanctuary had been too small for him, so he'd taken two apart and welded them back together. He tugged experimentally at the seams. They held.
At least take this,
Cha said with exasperation. Thanos turned to his friend. From another locker, Cha had unearthed a medium-length pole with a flaring, curved spike at the end.
Where did you get that?
Thanos asked.
I liberated it and some other gear before we sold the Leviathan. Take it.
Thanos stared doubtfully at the Chitauri battle staff that Cha held out to him.
I don't need a weapon. These are my people.
They've been ravaged by disease and disaster,
Cha protested.
They're not the people you left behind. And may I remind you that they were never quite fond of you to begin with?
Thanos bristled at the comment, not from its harshness, but rather from its truth. Time had a way of whitewashing memory. The acrimony of Titan had faded in his mind, become a background to the greater need of his people. In his thoughts, his own love for them had become turned around and twisted into reciprocal love for him. He thought rarely of his father, or of the looks of shock and disgust that had been the backdrop to his childhood. Instead, subconsciously, he permitted himself mostly memories of Cinta, of Gwynth, even of the synths who had cared for his mother. His mother. He thought of her, and not of her madness.
Titans are proud, but not stupid, he told Cha. They know now I was right. They'll welcome me with open arms.
I'm worried about exactly what kind of arms those might be,
Cha replied.
Live up to your people's reputation. Don't be stupid. Take the damned staff, Thanos, just in case.
With a resigned sigh, he accepted the weapon and collapsed it to its carry form.
I'm only doing this because the irony of a pacifist insisting I be armed amuses me,
Thanos told him.
I didn't give it to you as a pacifist,
Cha replied.
I did it as your friend.
Thanos piloted the command module through the thick soup of Titan's atmosphere, trying not to think of his last voyage of this kind. He'd been going in the opposite direction in the vessel known, temporarily, as Exile One. He'd been certain that his people were doomed, and now he had proof that he was right. When he broke through the cloud cover, he beheld devastation. Even kilometers above the Eternal City, he could make out the outline of the city perimeter, just barely. It had been encroached upon by a massive flow of cryo-magma from the ridge of cryo-volcanoes. Orange dust swam everywhere, consolidated organonitrates from the cryo-eruptions. The cryo-magma would have exploded to the surface, swamped the city, and then almost immediately frozen solid. Those struck by its initial blast would have been flash-frozen in an instant. The sudden drop in temperature would have caused the city's weather modulation systems to overcompensate. The cryo-magma would have melted and then re-frozen. The city would have gone into a panic. Worse yet, he noticed new foothills on the west side of the city, plate tectonics in action. With the cryomagma moving from under the crust to the surface, the delicate subterranean balance had been disrupted. The geologic plates beneath the city had shifted, with the western plate rising up to create a whole new topography, and probably wiping out half the city in one fell swoop. Thanos gritted his teeth and kept an eye on the hologram that was locked onto the signal Cha had received in orbit. It was stronger now, under the cloud cover, and it was definitely emanating from the Mentor Plex.
I am truly going home.
He found a clearing 10 kilometers from the Mentor Plex, in what had been a shopping bazaar. The stalls and kiosks were abandoned, many of them folded away, leaving him enough room to set down the command module. His environment sensors told him that the air outside was breathable, but contained high levels of carcinogens and at least 4 unknown pathogens. He slipped into his environment suit and tested it for leaks. It was sound. When the entry portal to the module opened, a dull wind picked up as the air pressure between the module and the outside obeyed the laws of physics and balanced. Orange dust swirled into the command module and lay in thin sheets on the control board. He stood in the doorway and hesitated, gazing out at the utterly empty bazaar. In his experience, no part of the city had ever been so barren. It almost didn't seem like Titan at all. After a moment, he turned back and tucked the collapsed Chitauri staff into a holster at his side, then stepped down onto the surface of the planet Titan for the first time in years. All around him, eddies in the air spun cyclones of dust. The air was cold, almost as cold as on the Chitauri homeworld, despite the brighter, warmer sun. He looked around, half expecting to see someone approach him, half expecting bodies stacked 10 deep. But there was nothing. The bazaar had been abandoned.
Cha, he said into his comms. I've arrived on the surface.
Static responded to him. Too much pollution in the atmosphere. He couldn't broadcast with the low-powered personal comms unit. He would be cut off from Cha for the duration. Consulting his handheld scanner, he confirmed that the signal was coming from the Mentorplex. It towered over the rest of the city, its upper stories swathed in dust and clouds. The tower was bent slightly, leaning off kilter, no longer perpendicular to the ground. The same ground quakes that had raised the western side of the city had wreaked havoc on Alarz's grand accomplishment as well. Thanos double-checked the oxygen-nitrogen mix in his air tanks, then began walking home. It was slow going in the confining environment suit, and as he got closer, the streets and walkways became clogged with debris, trash, and then bodies. The first body he saw was a young girl, no older than 8 or 10. She lay in perfect repose, as though she'd become tired and decided to take a nap here on the walkway. Thanos knelt by her. She seemed so peaceful that he could not believe she was actually dead, but when he touched her, she did not move, and her flesh had the yielding, slippery feel of a corpse. She had died here, and the cold and the aridity had preserved her thus. It was worse than finding her rotting or skeletal. She was a parody of life and of death at the same time.
Sleep well, child,
he murmured, and continued on his way. He thought of Gwynth, the Gwynth of his dreams. She was rotting away, not at all like these eerily preserved cadavers. The dream did not match reality. Maybe that meant she still lived. He chided himself for superstition, for giving into mysticism and magical thinking. Dreams were nothing more than dreams. She was alive or she was not, and the difference had nothing to do with the random neurons firing in his brain at night. By the time he arrived at the Mentorplex, he had become inured to the sight of bodies. He'd stopped counting at 100, finding it pointless. He had proposed killing half of Titan, and now so many more were dead. He'd been right beyond his wildest imaginings. How many had survived? A few thousand in the Mentorplex, he surmised, and twice that number in shelters along the edge of the city? Perhaps as much as 10% of the population of Titan in the best-case scenario. He could have saved half of them, if only they had listened. Within half a kilometer of the Mentorplex, the roads were so clotted with bodies and refuse that he drew his staff and locked it into its full fighting length to use as a walking stick as he maneuvered over and around piles. He no longer paused to mourn the dead. There were too many. The smell overwhelmed the air recirculators in his environment suit, and soon the stench of dead and desiccated bodies filled his helmet. He increased the antibiotic and antiviral mix of chemicals in his breathing air to compensate. The Mentorplex's lean was more egregious the closer he got. He began to wonder how the building managed to keep from toppling over, so steep was its angle. Alarz's architectural and material sciences genius was evident in the mere standing of the tower. The main entrance was jammed shut by fallen steel and rubble. It took Thanos an hour to navigate the treacherous, cumbered circumference of the tower to the emergency portal along the eastern side. The door's controls worked, but a short circuit somewhere had disconnected them from the door itself. Every time he pushed the button, he was greeted with a success trill and a flash of green light, but the door would slide open only an inch before shutting again. So he wedged the Chitauri staff in the inch-wide gap when it appeared, and leaned into it with all his weight. Chitauri metal and his raw strength won out, and the door ground open even farther, then stuck there. Just enough room for Thanos to squeeze in. He was in the lobby of the Mentorplex, where tenants and visitors would pass through on their way to the lifts. The lights were out. An emergency protocol, no doubt. Power had to be conserved for life support in the necessary areas of the Mentorplex. Splashy, abstract, photonic art had decorated the walls, but without power, the place was just a small, dark chamber with a floor covered in a scrim of orange dust. According to his portable scanner, the signal was coming from below the surface. In addition to 500 stories above the ground, the Mentorplex also extended 50 stories below. A perfect place to wait out the environmental disasters and keep quarantined from the plague. His environment suit had a built-in headlamp, which he now activated. The orange dust swirled around him in eddies conjured by his footsteps. There were no bodies here. He'd passed through this lobby more times than he could readily recall. It had been a place of life, cramped with comers and goers. Now it was empty and hollow. The anti-gravity lifts were offline, of course, since there was no power. He broke down the door to one with the help of the Chitauri staff and gazed into the black abyss of the empty lift shaft. The scanner confirmed that the signal emanated from down there. A 50-story climb. Or drop, if he slipped. Back outside, he rummaged through the wreckage and scrap piled around the building, until he found several lengths of stout cable, which he fused with blasts from the battle staff. Dragging it inside, he tied the new single cable around an outcropping of bent steel. He tested it with all his strength. Before he could change his mind, he tossed the free end of the cable down the shaft and began his descent. After 10 stories, his arms and shoulder complained. After 30, they burned with the effort of hauling his own considerable body weight. The only way he could mark his progress was by twisting to aim his headlamp down occasionally to make sure there was nothing impeding his progress. As best he could tell, it was one endless black well all the way down. He reached the bottom with inches of cable left to spare, his shoulders afire, his fingers numb and sweat slick in his gloves. The scanner told him that the air was free of pathogens and safe to breathe, so he removed the helmet of his suit and wiped perspiration from his face with the back of his hand. He was in the ink-black bottom of an elevator shaft that stretched from his position to nearly a kilometer in the sky. Wind whispered above him. Echoes and creaks sounded all around. The entire Mentorplex seemed as though it could collapse in on him at any moment. All the more reason not to dally. The door to the lift was to his right. He bashed and slammed his way through it, aware that the sound of his approach was probably sending thrills of fear into the survivors. Still, there was no way to be gentle. When he entered the corridor, a series of lights flickered to life, dimly illuminating an old maintenance access hallway. Power had been conserved for the last meters leading to the survivors. He walked down the corridor, lights coming to life ahead of him and fading behind. It was a short trip to a large, stout door, too thick and sturdy for him to blast or bash through. With a slightly trembling hand, he reached out to touch its surface. It was cold and clammy. Beyond this door lay the remains of his people. They could have been trapped within for years. He hoped their better natures had won out, but he prepared himself for a tableau of blood and horror. Being cooped up for so long, with the weight of the calamity upon them, could do horrible things to the psyches of even the kindest and best adjusted people. He rapped at the door, the sound blunt and muted. Just when he thought nothing would happen, a small hatch opened in the ceiling. A globe drifted down and bathed him in a green light. A body scanner. The door slid open as though it had been installed and freshly oiled the day before. Thanos steeled himself and stepped inside. The door slid shut behind him, simultaneous with overhead lights sparking and flaring to life. He'd expected a hovel, an overcrowded room gone to filth from the presence of scores of titans crammed into the only safe location and forced to subsist there. Instead, The room was bright and clean. Obsessively clean, really. He spied not even a mote of dust. It measured perhaps 10 meters to a side, the walls polished and gleaming steel, the floor and ceiling cast in a burnished alloy that reflected and held the light. It was a box, and it was empty, except for a long, oblong crate at the far end. Thanos double-checked his scanner. The signal was strongest here. It was coming from right here. But there was no one. The oblong crate hissed, and the lid opened. A figure within sat up, then stood. Thanos fumbled with his scanner, lost the battle, and dropped it with a resounding clatter and clang. It was his father. It was Alars. He had survived. His jaw dropped as he beheld his father, surely the last person he expected to see.
"Father!"
Thanos exclaimed, then berated himself for saying something so obvious and pointless. For all he'd accomplished since his exile, he reverted to a child in the presence of his father. Foolish. As he watched, his father climbed smoothly and gracefully out of the crate, then stood erect and, gazing directly at Thanos, began to speak.
"Welcome. I am Alars, architect of the Eternal City of Titan. You are speaking to a synthetically intelligent version of myself. I, tragically, died in the environmental collapse that killed the population of Titan." "Wait."
Thanos stepped forward.
"Repeat that."
The synth that wore his father's face tilted its head and smiled somewhat indulgently.
"I am equipped with a variety of personality inventories, depending upon my conversation partner. Please hold still for a bioscan."
Closer to his father than he'd been in years, yet farther away than ever, Thanos stood motionless as the synth scanned him. When the scan was done, its facial expression softened just slightly.
"Thanos," it said, "my son. Father, what's happened? Where are the survivors?"
The synth smiled sadly.
"There are no survivors. The environmental disasters combined with a global pandemic to form an extinction-level event. Every living thing on Titan is no more."
It delivered the news in an approximation of a gentle tone, which somehow infuriated Thanos all the more. His father had never used such a tone with him, and yet he had programmed his synth to speak to him thusly, should the synth encounter him. And since Alars had bothered programming the synth to recognize Thanos, that meant...
"You knew I'd come," Thanos whispered. "You banished me from my home, but you knew I'd come. You were relying on me to save you, despite yourself. My son..."
The synth opened its arms for an embrace, still smiling that sad smile.
"My faith in you has been rewarded. You have returned to us. We are saved." "Saved?"
The synth's biotechnical circuitry must have corrupted over the years, in spite of the clean room in which it lived.
"There's no one to save. Everyone died."
He realized that he'd clenched his fists and his jaw, that angry white flecks of spittle had gathered on his lips and in the grooves of his chin.
"My son,"
Alars said from the synthetic realm of almost life, with a sympathy and a kindness he'd never expressed while alive.
"There is a way. Let me show you."
And he smiled. Not a sad smile. A bright one. A joyous one, and it twisted his face into something unrecognizable, something that had never existed in life.
"You let them all die."
Thanos stepped back.
"I told you it was coming, and you ignored me. No, you did worse than ignore me. If you'd ignored me, I could have forgiven you, because at least then you would have the excuse of not hearing my warning. But you listened to me. You heard everything I had to say, and you still banished me. Thanos, that is all in the past. There is a path to the future, for you and for Titan.
Please, hear me out. Our people are dead, but they may yet still live.
Shaking his head, Thanos felt the room press around him. He was keenly aware that he was 50 stories beneath the surface, 50 stories away from open space and air, no matter how befouled, 50 stories under a tower that listed dangerously and could collapse in on him at any moment. He'd never been claustrophobic before, but now the walls seemed closer, the ceiling lower.
"You're mad,"
he said, his voice trembling in a combination of fury and fear.
"No, Thanos. Behold, the Gene Library."
With that, a small hatch in the floor at Thanos' feet opened, and an orb the size of a head drifted up, hovering in position between them.
"Gene Library? My greatest invention,"
said Nata Lars.
"Long after your exile, I found myself re-examining your data and predictions. I arrived at similar conclusions, with variances well within a statistical regularity. Once I realized that your predicted environmental collapse could actually occur, I took it upon myself to collect DNA from certain Titans, the very best of us. These samples have been preserved here, in perfect cryostasis, waiting for rescue. With them, you can clone our people back into existence, Thanos. Titan will live again."
Staring at the Gene Library and its smooth, unlined surface, Thanos found himself, quite to his surprise, performing calculations. DNA samples could be small. The globe was only half a meter in diameter, but that could contain hundreds of thousands of samples, properly and conservatively stored, including his mother, Sinta, Gwynth. Dare he believe it? No. He knew his father. Alara's preserved the very best of Titan. Sinta and Gwynth would not have met his elitist standards. Nor would poor, mad, flawed Suisan. Thanos reached out and touched the cold, perfect exterior of the Gene Library. It was functional and beautiful, a true testament to his father's craftsmanship and dedication to detail. Dedication to detail. Yes. To all details except the ones that mattered.
"You took nothing upon yourself,"
he said quietly.
"I'm afraid I didn't hear you,"
Alars said calmly. Thanos's upper lip curled. He pulled his hand away from the Gene Library.
"I said you took nothing upon yourself. You're a synthetic person, a thing. You think you're Alars, but you're just his ghost. You're what he thinks he was, rattling around in the confines of your artificial skull."
"You're upset," the synth said soothingly. "This is understandable. You've endured serious trauma. I can offer you a mood stabilizer if you'd like. Then you are to take the Gene Library with you. Return to a place of safety and use it to resurrect Titan.
Couldn't resist investing your simulacrum with your penchant for giving orders, eh, father?"
Thanos said sardonically.
"Still telling me what to do from beyond the grave."
The synth clucked its tongue in a way Alars never had, though perhaps he thought he had.
"Thanos, think things through, and you'll agree that my way is best."
"Fight me!"
Thanos shouted.
"Tell me I'm wrong, and you're right. Then maybe I'll believe you're Alars and do your bidding."
The synth smiled somewhat indulgently.
"I'm not programmed for conflict with you, Thanos."
Somehow that spiked his rage higher, fueled his anger. Not programmed? Not programmed for conflict with you, Thanos? With a roar, Thanos unsheathed the Chitauri battle staff at his side. It snapped to its full length instantly, and he swung it in a wide arc, bringing its electrified blade into contact with the synth's neck. For an instant, the synth's expression was one of such horror and shock that Thanos thought it was truly his father brought back to life, that he'd made a terrible mistake. But the blade continued, severing the head, and Thanos saw not actual blood, but rather what he knew to be the viscous biofuel that coursed through the artificial veins of a synth. The head bounced once on the floor, then lay there. The synth's body remained standing, poised, as though rudely interrupted mid-thought. For some reason, that odd, headless, preternatural calm enraged him further. He raised the staff and brought it down again, this time cleaving the synth's torso in two, down to the end of the sternum.
"This is conflict!"
he shouted.
"This is conflict with Thanos!"
When he wrenched the staff's blade free, it skidded off to one side, striking the floating gene library, which shot away from him and spanged off a wall. It hovered a little lower in the air now, dented on one side. As he stalked over to it, Thanos detected the hissing sound of escaping gases. The liquid nitrogen with which Alars had preserved the DNA samples was turning to gas and escaping.
"Good!"
Thanos crowed.
"Good! You deserve it!"
He raised the staff over his head and brought it down on the gene library. Sparks shot out at the impact, and the globe smacked into the floor, then bobbled back up into the air, spinning on its equator. Another crack had appeared in it.
"Good!"
he cried again.
"You deserve to die! You all deserve to die!"
With each word, he smashed the staff against the globe again. It ricocheted off a wall, shook wildly, spun away, drifted in the air, hanging there, unable to maintain its normal height. He hit it again.
"You should have listened to me!"
Smack.
"Why didn't you listen to me?"
Smack. The globe pinged off the floor, bounced, rolled. It couldn't hover any longer.
"You could have lived! I could have saved you!"
he bellowed, throwing aside the staff, kicking the globe across the room where it cracked against another wall. He scooped it up and found purchase in one of the cracks. He ripped open the gene library. Liquid nitrogen containers spilled everywhere, freezing the floor and sending up a cold mist. A splash of it landed on his bare skin, freezing it instantly, but he barely felt it. Slender tubes fit into precise little grooves on plates within. Thanos started breaking them open, first one at a time, delighting in it, then by the fistful when one at a time was too slow. He was there for a long time, killing Titan all over again, as the synth that pretended to be Alars slowly sank to its knees, then tipped over and performed its own simulation of dying.
"You could have been alive," Thanos whispered when he was finished. "Half of you could have survived."
Tears streamed down his face and hissed in the pools of liquid nitrogen.
"I brought no miracles, Kebby. Why did I even bother trying?"
Chapter 29. When he docked with Sanctuary many hours later, Thanos had regained his composure. The time in the survival room beneath Titan seemed to have taken place long, long ago, as though it had happened in history and he had heard about it from someone who'd read the story. They were gone. All gone. The mad Titan was the only Titan to survive. He was the last son of a dead world. Cha raced eagerly to the command module once atmosphere was restored to the docking chamber.
"The shuttles are all ready. I'm just waiting for your word."
Thanos regarded Cha with pity. Cha would never understand. Cha never could understand. Cha believed that there was a purpose to all things, including suffering. But Thanos knew the truth. There was no purpose. There was no plan. There was only luck and bleak coincidence, and stupidity, and arrogance.
"There are no survivors," Thanos told him.
"But the beacon?"
"Automated system. No one is left alive.
He brushed past Cha and made for the airlock that led back into Sanctuary.
But Thanos!
Cha called after him.
What do we do? What do we do now? Thanos! Thanos!
Soul. We are the sum total of our decisions, not of our beliefs. Chapter 30. Depression often yielded lassitude and lack of hunger. In Thanos's case, it was the opposite. He returned from the surface of Titan and within a day found himself absolutely ravenous. Cha brought him great steaming trays of food from the ship's replicators, seemingly more than any one being could consume without becoming ill. Thanos downed it all and asked for more. He set up a makeshift gym in one of the ship's cavernous cargo bays, and exercised as though sweat and exertion could resurrect the dead. Between enormous meals, he pushed his body to its limits and beyond. Sanctuary remained in a parking orbit around Titan for weeks, then months, as Thanos ate and trained through his grief and rage. Cha spoke little, for there was no point in speaking. Thanos did not respond. Except once. One time. When Cha ventured to tell him that Thanos did not need to let the death of Titan define him, that his life could still be meaningful, and Thanos had turned to Cha with murder gleaming in his eyes.
Enough.
One word, two syllables. They sufficed. Cha spoke no more. The rental period on the ship expired. Cha fielded hails from the owner, stalling and hoping that Thanos would come to his senses sooner rather than later. He contemplated piloting the ship back to occupied space on his own. But what good would that do? To have them both arrested and thrown into debtor's prison somewhere along the galactic edge? Cha believed in Thanos because Cha believed in his own place in the universe. That it was not random or haphazard. And if Cha's place in the universe was by Thanos' side, then Thanos' mission must be good and right. But what now? What now, with the mission forever null and void? Could this be the end? Did his path and Thanos' path end in defeat? Or, as Cha suspected but could not voice to his friend, did the universe have a grander plan? The destruction of Titan was a setback that would lead to a greater victory. The hails from Sanctuary's owner were becoming more frequent and more incensed. Cha didn't even bother opening the channel anymore when a hail came through. Having abuse heaped upon him by an irate Kree would not help Thanos, and it obviously wasn't helpful to Cha either. At last, Thanos deigned to leave his makeshift gym/quarters. He came to the bridge, where Cha was listlessly watching Titan spin below, an orange-encircled tomb for an entire race. He couldn't imagine the horror.
Cha,
Thanos said, the first time in months he'd spoken Cha's name.
Yes?
Flush the starboard cargo bay into space. Then let's put in a course.
Cha blinked. Thanos had been living in the starboard cargo bay for months now.
Flush?
Thanos shrugged and took a seat in the navigator's chair.
It disgusts me. There's nothing in there I need. Purge it.
Cha shrugged and keyed in the command. An airlock opened on the starboard side of the ship, and everything within, all of Thanos' discarded food, sweaty clothing, and improvised exercise equipment, was sucked out into the vacuum of space.
Where exactly are we setting the course to?
Cha asked. Thanos was sitting in the navigator's chair, but he had not moved to enter in coordinates. So Cha summoned a star chart hologram at his seat.
We're returning to the Chitauri homeworld.
The owner of this ship is...
I am the owner of this ship, Thanos said. If the previous owner wishes to contradict me, he can discuss it with my army of Chitauri.
So, we're thieves?
Thanos turned to Cha, but without heat or anger. His expression was mild.
I have need of the ship. I have a greater cause than transporting fruits or machine parts.
Oh, transporting an army?
No, Cha.
We are transporting two things you care about quite a bit. Hope and salvation.
On the Chitauri homeworld, they picked up two squadrons of armed and armored Chitauri warriors, as well as the other. Then, Thanos had Cha lay in a course for the planet Fenlop 11, a world 3 light hours from the jump gate at Seti Beta.
"Why this world?" Cha asked.
"I've been studying it," Thanos revealed. "It has similar environmental and population dynamics as Titan. We're going to save them from themselves, Cha. You were right. The end of Titan is not the end of my quest. And I was right, too. We must kill half to save the rest. This time, I won't fail. This time, we have proof. The evidence of Titan's fall. We will succeed."
Bearing in mind his failure at the Asgardian outpost, Thanos this time chose to remain aboard Sanctuary, sending the other as his emissary to the King of Fenlop 11. King was actually a misnomer. The ruling monarch was elected, not selected by accident of birth, and served for a term of 30 local years. For that term, though, he or she was supreme ruler, aided by a legislative body, but not bound to it. Unlike the wretched democracy of Titan, this form of government made things simple. Convince one person, and you've made your will into law. They rigged the other with a microphone and transmitter, so they could monitor the negotiations from aboard the ship. The Fenlops were tall, almost obscenely tall, 2.5 meters on average. They were slender, with a pliable, almost breakable appearance, and grayish-silver skin that sparkled in any available light. The other had never looked more like an insect than when he approached the court of His Majesty Lorif the First.
"Your Majesty," the other said, as he'd been coached,
"I am humbled and honored to speak to you on behalf of my lord, Thanos."
"I've not heard of Thanos," said the king. "What world does he call home?"
"He calls no world home, your majesty. He is a nomad, worldless. He has lost his people and his planet to the same plagues that lurk in your own paradise. Have you heard of Titan?"
An advisor leaned in to whisper in the king's ear, but His Majesty flicked him away.
"I have. A most wretched and sorrowful happenstance. Thanos hails from Titan. He is the last of their kind, your majesty, and his tragedy has charged him with a mission, to prevent Titan's fate from befalling other worlds."
On Sanctuary, Thanos listened, holding his breath. He and Cha exchanged a hopeful glance.
"You speak true," the king said, sighing. "My own science advisors have warned me that we are in grave danger of complete environmental collapse. For all my power and authority, I am helpless to stop it. I can do many things, but I cannot compel my people to stop reproducing."
He leaned back in his throne.
"Your Lord Thanos, he has a solution?"
"He does. I will let him explain it to you."
With that, the other activated a holographic receiver built into his armor, which projected an image of Thanos from Sanctuary into the throne room. They had scaled up the hologram so Thanos' eyes were on level with the king's. Thanos decided that a bow would not make him seem weak, and was in fact the polite thing to do. He bowed to the king of Fenlop 11.
"Your majesty and your courtiers, I bid you good morrow from my ship in orbit above your planet. Forgive me if I elide the niceties of our first meeting. There are urgent issues to discuss."
"Go on,"
the king told him, gesturing.
"Years ago, I proposed a solution to Titan's inevitable demise, one that was rejected by the people, to their eventual dismay and destruction. I hope and believe that you will not do the same."
"I would hear of your solution, Lord Thanos."
It was the first time someone had called him Lord Thanos. He was inordinately pleased, and paused for a moment to absorb the pleasure before continuing.
The solution is simple, ruthless, and incontrovertible, Thanos said. You must eliminate 50% of your population, and you must do so immediately.
Aboard Sanctuary, Thanos stared into the hologram projector. The throne room had gone silent. Was there a problem with the audio transmitters? He wished they'd had time to outfit the other with visual sensors as well as oral. They could see him, but Thanos could only hear them. After a protracted silence, the king spoke.
Forgive me, Lord Thanos. I am unfamiliar with Titan humor. Was I supposed to laugh?
Thanos seethed, but fought to keep his ire from showing on his face, projected so much larger down on the surface.
This is no joke. I proposed the same solution to Titan, and they rejected it. You know the results of that rejection. Where half could have been spared, now all are dead. You can avoid this fate. My euthanasia technology is painless and can be altered quite easily to conform to your species' biology.
More silence.
Every moment you delay, Your Majesty, Thanos said with heat, is one moment closer to an extinction-level event for your planet.
And how am I to convince my people that this is the correct course of action? I am their monarch, but I will not put people to death who have no wish to die.
An easy question. Good.
You submit yourself as the first volunteer, Thanos said. Lead by example.
The next sound Thanos heard from below was a dry chuckle.
His Majesty has left the room, Thanos of Titan, said a new voice. I am Viceroy Londro. While some may appreciate your humor, I'm afraid His Majesty does not. If you have a serious proposal for us, I am willing to listen.
You've heard my proposal.
Thanos' rage sneaked up on him, pounced and sank its claws into his shoulders. He could not see the throne room, but he could see devastated Titan, orange with dust, wrecked and ramshackle. He could smell the bodies.
I warn you, if you do not take drastic action, your streets will clot with bodies, your monuments will fall, you will be less than dust, a dead world with no savior, no memento, no story to tell. You will—
My lord.
It was the other, speaking calmly.
I've been escorted out of the palace. They're not listening.
Cha entered the bridge of the ship with the other, who had just returned safely to Sanctuary. Thanos sat alone, slumped in the captain's chair, staring out at the curve of Fenlop 11 through the window before him. The planet was a banded beauty, rainbows of soil and water making it a chromatic wonder turning slowly before them.
They will all die, Thanos said quietly.
Cha put a hand on Thanos' shoulder.
There are other worlds in danger, Thanos. We'll find them. We'll refine our message. We'll save them.
Yes, we will. But first we must conclude our business here on Fenlop 11.
He rose from his chair and pointed to the other.
Have your troops mustered and ready for combat within the hour. We will target the capital city and its defense forces first, then the outlying military bases.
The other bobbed his head and left the bridge. Cha stared, slack-jawed, at Thanos.
Close your mouth, Cha. The sight of your gaping maw is unappealing.
What are you doing? Why are you attacking them?
They're all going to die anyway, Cha. We saw the results on Titan, did we not?
Thanos settled back down into his seat.
Hastening their demise may save some of the planet's resources, making it available for settlement by a wiser species at some point in the future. Besides, this way I am sparing them all the slow death of disease and geologic upheaval, granting them instead a swift, merciful death.
He arched an eyebrow.
Do you not approve?
Cha
cast about for words.
They are innocent. What was it you said back at Titan? I see no balance in children dead in the streets.
Exactly. That is their fate if we do not act. Speak not of innocence, Char. This is the path. It is not about innocence or guilt. It is about life and death. One begets the other. As I said, these people are already doomed. The science of it is irrefutable.
He paused a moment.
If a weed chokes a flower, you kill the weed so that the flower may live. Do you not?
Cha stammered.
I suppose so.
In the garden of the universe, we have much weeding to do. If you'd rather not, then...
He strummed his fingers on the arm of the chair.
There are shuttlecraft at your disposal.
Cha's mouth opened and closed. Opened and closed. At last, he offered a small shrug.
I believe in our path, Thanos.
Good. According to my scans, the Fenlops don't have long-range super-atmospheric weaponry. So we should be safe here. But just in case, lay in an emergency retreat course.
Cha went to the navigation pod and did just that. Meanwhile, the other was preparing his troops. Chapter 31 The conquest of Fenlop 11 came swiftly. The king and his advisors thought Thanos to be a madman with no resources and no recourse to their rejection. They were shocked when the Chitauri ships rained lightning and fire from the sky. They'd never seen anything like a Chitauri army. No one had. Moving in perfect lockstep, with hive-mind coordinated precision, the Chitauri soldiers captured the capital city in no time. The nearby military bases were crushed by a brace of Leviathans. Thanos' orders were simple, so simple that even the lack-brained Chitauri could follow them. Kill every living thing you see. There was no need for the grand strategies of war, for the thrust and counter-thrust, the capture of key territories and the holding of hostages for negotiations. No one would be suing for peace. This was slaughter, plain and simple. Kinder, Thanos knew, than leaving these people to the capricious mercies of their own planet's chaotic revenge. The war was one-sided. With the element of surprise and the willingness to discard the usual stratagems and rules of war in favor of utter ruthlessness, Thanos had an early advantage that he pressed and pressed and pressed. The Chitauri's teleportation technology made them impossible to counter. Still, as combat dragged into its third week, he watched from the sky above and told Cha,
"We need more Chitauri, more Leviathans, more weapons."
Cha, who had not slept much since the beginning of the war, looked up from his monitoring station, where he was in communication with the other to direct troops where they were needed.
"More? My projections indicate that we'll have their entire military either destroyed or under our control within another day. Then it's just a mop-up operation to kill the survivors. By the time any reinforcements would arrive, we'd be done."
Thanos permitted himself a smile at Cha's expense.
"Oh, your naivete amuses me, Cha. I speak not of our current conflict, but of our next one."
It took a moment for the remark to penetrate the layers of sleepiness that had accreted around Cha's brain. He said,
"Next one?"
in the tone of a complete dullard. But Cha wasn't a complete dullard. Thanos took pity on him.
"You've done good work, Cha. Get some sleep. The Chitauri know what to do, and I can relay my own commands to the other if need be."
"Next one,"
Cha said again, rising and heading to the door.
"Next one?"
"Yes,"
Thanos thought.
"The next one."
Chitauri scavenger teams pillaged Fenlop 11 for usable resources and materiel. It was just pragmatic. There was no one left alive on the planet to use any of it, so Thanos might as well take it. He was grateful that he had a cargo ship at his disposal. Most of the Chitauri soldiers remained in the Leviathans, which now floated side by side with Sanctuary, leaving the cargo space free for the raw ore, food stocks, and technology ferried up from the planet.
They made a stop at the Chitauri homeworld to replace dead soldiers and ramp up their numbers. Then, without hesitation, they set out for the